Hi, it's still Tuesday, later in the day. I guess Mincha is in an hour. And I want to say a few words from Mishpacha Stefanski about the coming 3 weeks. Sunday, of course, is going to be Shavuos B'Tamuz. This Shabbos, by the way, for those who are interested, I'm going to be in Teaneck, speaking at the BMA Beis Medrash Bergenfield. If you go online, you'll see all the times and information. Maybe I'll put it out later. But meanwhile, the fact is that the 3 weeks start on Sunday. And if you're Ashkenaz, of course, you have a concept of 3 weeks. You refrain from different things during the 3 weeks and the 9 days, as we know. The Sephardim have it different. I get it. But where does the custom of the Bein HaMetzarim come from? I know it says, Kol Rod Feh, Hisuku Bein HaMetzarim, in the book of Eicha. But, and there is a Chazal that says that's the 3 weeks. But where do you get that from? What I mean to say is like this. What's the historical origin to the degree that we're able to access it, to the degree that we can possibly access it? I don't think I've ever spoken about that before. And I'll tell you what the Jewish tradition says, which is interesting. When you have a custom which is old and widespread, but you don't know exactly where it's coming from, there are several ways of trying to retrace it. In the rabbinic culture, as far as I know, like I say, it's only my opinion. And one of the ways is to look, are there any other precedents, particularly in the Bible, for 3 weeks? Bein HaMetzarim, we see from Shavuos B'Tamuz to Tisha B'Av is 3 weeks. So where do you find in the Tanakh 3 weeks? And the Shibuli Aleket famously says, according to Sadiq or whoever, that you find it in Daniel. And this is actually interesting because the book of Daniel has all kind of different parts to it. The first six chapters, I guess, are stories. And the second six chapters are like dreams and prophetic dreams, right? Whether you classify technically as prophecy, I'll leave that to others. I mean, that's in the Gemara, but, you know, they're visions. And they're obviously of great significance because we build a lot of things around these ideas, such as the Messianic era, the apocalypse, the World War III, the Gog-Magog. There's a lot of stuff, you know, that you get from the book of Daniel. Believe me, it's not 100% clear. That's the point. You have the six monsters. I mean, the four monsters, which are the four kingdoms. You have the ram and the unicorn. You have this, that, and the other. And then you have something really obscure, which is chapter, 10, 11, and 12, I guess it is. Is that right? 10, 11, and 12, right? I know that the guy might have wanted to make up the numbers, but that, you know, that's how you find it. And that's all one big dream. 10 is like an intro, and then 11 and 12 is the substance of the dream. And in the intro, Daniel's going to see an angel. He's going to tell him stuff. And talk about the future and so forth and so on. First, he's going to be freaked out, as he often happens in the book of Daniel, and he'll like almost pass out until the angel holds on to him and revives him and so on and so forth. But where does this dream come from? And the answer is, if you read the book of Daniel, it's straight there, that he was bothered by certain things, and he went on like a tremendous fast, like a tinus, on his own, for a very long period of time. And eventually, through self-mortification, flagellation, and fasting, he gets a heavenly appearance. Now you might say like this, maybe he was nuts because, you know, he's a starvation. No, he mamash got some kind of a heavenly appearance. I'll call it nevuah. And the time frame is very important. Remember, I'm talking about the historical origins of the 3 weeks here. And if you look at the beginning of chapter 10 in Book of Daniel, it says, Bishnah Shalosh Lekoresh Melech Paras, in the third year of King Cyrus. Here we have Israel fighting Iran today. Davar Nigla Daniel Shenikh Belshazzar. Something was revealed to Daniel, whose Gaisha name was Belshazzar. Not the Babylonian king Belshazzar, but Daniel's name Belshazzar with a T. Excuse me. And the emes hadavar, the tzava gadol, is a hard thing to translate, actually. Hold on for a second. And now there are, I mean, a from way of translating it is something that would take place in a long time. To regulate Tzava Gadol will be a great war. So that makes more sense. Emes Hadavar v'Tzava Gadol, Ubinas Hadavar, Ubina L'Bamara. Right? And basically, the understanding of the message came to him in a vision. So he sees a significant vision. And that's the beginning of this long business that goes through three chapters. And how described, that was like a preface. And then you start from the speech of Daniel himself. Bayomim Mohem, listen closely. Ani Daniel Hayisim is Abel Shlosha Shumim Yomim. Ah, I was fasting for 3 weeks. Now, again, there are a lot of ways of interpreting that. 3 years, three sets of years, and, you know, the Barban El Rashi and all that. Go with the plain meaning, because that's how most, despite what you think, most Gedolim down the ages, when they look at a pasuk, they don't think of the Ramban's way of reading it, something, the straightforward way of reading it. So Daniel was fasting for 3 weeks. What do you mean? Lechem chamudus lo achalti. The ubasar b'yayin lo boil pi. B'sochel asachti ad melos shloshes shvum yamim. That I didn't eat any bread, or at least lechem chamudus, no decent bread. Ubasar b'yayin lo boil pi. No basar and no yayin. And I didn't take a bath, soklo sakti, for 3 weeks. Okay? So in other words, this was like a thing he volunteered on his own, and that's a long time. Again, if you get into the world of Mefarshim, what exactly did he eat? Did he not eat? I don't want to get into this, you know, did he fast on Pesach and so on and so forth, you know, the bar mitzvah and the other things. But for my purposes and yours, the bottom line goes like this in the plain shot. He had like his own little Ramadan for 3 weeks or close to a month. He fasted all day and maybe ate at night. Or if he ate at all, maybe even during the day, but a little bit. You understand? Lechon chamudas lo, he ate no good food. So he ate enough just to keep himself alive. But he was on a very strict, I'm not going to say a starvation diet because he doesn't die, but, you know, a very rigid diet. And the idea was this is an act of mortification. And it's to get you, in his case, to a higher madrig, at least it seems that way, in order to get a vision. Now, what was bothering him? The plain way of reading this is, if it's the third year of King Cyrus, then we're talking about when Cyrus the Great allowed the Jews to go back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash after he conquered the Babylonian Empire, as I'm sure everybody's familiar. And then Cyrus changed his mind. And so that must have been a shock and a half. Here, remarkably, Koresh Melch Poras, having conquered the Babylonian Empire, and now ruling the entire Middle East, from India to the Mediterranean. Think about that. And now he says, Komar Hashem, whatever the pasuk says over there, that God told me to let the Jews go and rebuild the temple. And some did. But then he was persuaded, and this is all laid out in the book of Ezra, to change his mind, and he did change his mind. They said the Jews, if they get their act together, then they'll rebel against you, and there'll be you'll lose territory, and blah, blah, blah. So in other words, for certain Lashon Hara purposes, he changed his mind. Now, imagine if you were Jewish, like Daniel, and you're at court, like Daniel, because he was at court, and you moved heaven and earth to lobby the king, who's now conquered the Babylonian Empire, who's a foreigner, because Daniel was working for the king of Babel, or he was retired at that time, but now you have a new regime, but the new regime is intelligent, they want the smart people to work for them. And I'm talking about Cyrus, Koresh Melch Poras. And even though Daniel is usually associated with Cyrus's father-in-law, but I'm not going to get into that. And somehow or other, they get Cyrus to give permission to rebuild the temple. You see, this is what I'm talking about. This is the foreshadowing of Shavuot Thomas and the 3 weeks in the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, things like this. The first temple had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Now 70 years or something like that had lapsed. Now Koresh, the Persians, now conquered, you know, the whole Middle East. And there are Jews at court. Because, I mean, Koresh wasn't Jewish. And why would he know anything about Judaism? But if he issues this decree that the Jews can go back and rebuild, and he says the God of heaven has told me to do this, somebody got to the guy. So either it was Jared or it was Ivanka or somebody, you know what I mean? Or, David Friedman, one of these guys. Somebody got to Cyrus. Josephus says that the Jews showed Cyrus that he's mentioned in the book of Yeshayahu, Isaiah, I think 45, if I remember correctly, Komem Hashem Lemshich LeKoresh, and that it's predicted that, you know, who Yivne Beisi, that Cyrus will build the temple. And he fell for it. I'm sure that the enemies of the Jews, the PLO, the Hamas, and their lobbyists, because they had them in court also, told them that the Jews are lying, and they just put this in now and backdated it, and they said, you know, Isaiah knows they're full of it. They're trying to bamboozle you. But it seems that somehow or other, Daniel and the other Jews at court, maybe his three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, maybe it was Mordecai, I don't, you know, Ezra, Nehemiah, there were Jews at court, and I don't know how they got there, but they were, and they persuaded him that he really was a historical character mentioned in the Bible before he's even born, and that part of his destiny, I repeat, part of his destiny is to let the Jews build a temple, and he did it. But then he changes his mind because the Arab lobbyists got to him, the anti-Semitic lobbies got to him. Again, it's all laid out in the book of Ezra. And I've done this many times in the past. And he changed his mind. Now imagine if you were Daniel. You'd be shocked. Because this is not the way it's supposed to go. There was a prophecy, as Daniel mentions many times, and we all know from the book of Yirmiyahu, that there would be 70 years, and then the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. And 70 years were round up now. And things were falling into line, because the Babylonian Empire was going down the tubes, which nobody had foreseen, and the Persians were coming in and letting the Jews rebuild the temple. So it sounds like a plain and literal fulfillment of the prophecy of Yirmiyahu, and I'm sure the Jews, to the degree that they had any hope when they were 70 years in exile, they were looking to the prophecies of Yirmiyahu and people like that, who provide them with a light at the end of the tunnel, and they're saying that, you know, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. Now, imagine if you were Jewish during the 70 years in Babel. They had no country, they had no army, they had no nothing, they were busted, they were lucky not to be enslaved by Nebuchadnezzar in Babel just to live there. In a certain way, they were like the 10 tribes, that they were moved from point X to point Y. They moved from Israel, Judea, to Babel. And that's where they stayed. That's where it dumped. And the expectation was they would remain there. If there were nevuahs, then after 70 years, they're going to come back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. How are you going to do that? We don't have an army. We don't have a country. We don't have leadership. We're like at the mercy of all these goyim here in Babel, which was true. We can't see how it's even possible. And then 70 years come around. I'm sure the frumis told them, have emunah, things will work out. Like I always say, God is a chessboard. And you'll see that international events will so come together or discombobulate that you'll see a new reality, and the possibilities of rebuilding Beis HaMikdash will all of a sudden present themselves. And that's exactly what happened, because the Babylonian Empire went down the tubes and Cyrus took over, and Cyrus was persuaded, even though he had nothing to do with the Jews and he had nothing to do with any of these prophecies, one would think, and he was from a faraway country, from Iran, et cetera, et cetera. Nevertheless, in the 70th year, Koresh Melech Paras gives permission to do so. So I'm sure Daniel and the others must have said, see, that vindicates the truth of the Nevuah. And, you know, we told you. But then something comes which is not predicted in the book of Yirmiyahu, which is Cyrus changed his mind and put a stop order. And you know from retrospect that for 18 years, Beis HaMikdash was not allowed to be built. So they started a little bit and then they had to stop. The whole story of Purim takes place within this context. But for the rest of the reign of Koresh, for the rest of Cyrus, this stop order was not revoked, and the Jews were not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash, and that had deleterious effects in many ways in Eretz Yisrael, without going into all the details. And Daniel, as a leader and as a prophet of some sort, some level, is like astonished. And what the heck is going on over here? And I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, like I said before, if you knew that this is what the way it's going to be, you shouldn't say anything in the first place. And as a result, he's like asking God, explain to me Vos Totzach. But he got no answer. And so he put on a fast for 3 weeks. And at the end of 3 weeks, he gets an answer, although an obscure one, a weird one. As he says, I didn't eat and I didn't drink hardly anything, you know. And in the 24th day of the first month, so in other words, it sounds like it was Nisan, whatever, doesn't matter, right? He gets his vision. He sees a person that looks fearsome, and it's a vision, and is, you know, as he said over here, Ish echa levud badim, mosa chamber kefas uvas, kviyasa katarshish, ponu mari bozak, inan kalapidi eish, rozmar gol kin nekoshes, kol. He had an awesome appearance. And the guy proceeds to tell him, okay, that, you know, I was on my way to explain everything to you. As he says, it's almost funny. Where is it over here? He says, I was on my way to talk to you. The angel says, the truth of the matter is, I was on my way to tell you what you wanted to know 3 weeks ago. You didn't have to face these 3 weeks. And I'm coming over there. The only thing is, I was blocked. So I know it's weird. I get it. But let's say there's heavenly headquarters. And from heaven they look down, if I can use such a spatial expression, and they see Daniel fasting away. And orders are given that someone should go down to earth and tell him what's going on, but he was blocked like in a football game. But the Persian stopped me for 21 days. So I was blocked. I couldn't get through. And the only way I could get past is someone came to help me, which was the angel of Klal Yisrael, Michael, the archangel Michael, right? And so imagine me running to tell you something and somebody, some big palooka comes and blocks me and I can't get past him and I really want to tell you this and I can't get past the guy, like in a ball game. And then a friend of mine comes and says, I'll tackle the guy. I'll engage with him. And he goes, and the two of them are wrestling back and forth. And meanwhile, I can run around past him and go past them and carry out my mission. That's basically what the angel says. Okay? I know it sounds weird. And by the way, this is the passage in the Tanakh where you get the idea of a sar, that every people has an heavenly angel. You know, the sar shal Esav, the sar shal Edom, and all that. That comes from here, from this passage. It's not simply a medrash or something like that. Okay? And he says, and I'm going to tell your people about Achris Yomim. So basically, Daniel was worried about trying to understand how Cyrus' refusal or change of mind fit into the pattern. And Daniel said, I'm going to tell you more than that. I'm going to tell you about the end of history, next to 5,000 years or whatever it is. Not only about Cyrus. And I suppose, me, myself, and I suppose, only when you see the vast big picture do you understand how this particular incident of the refusal to change the mind of the king of Persia fits into the grand scheme. In other words, looking back, as I would today, from, you know, more than 2,500 years of hindsight, it was necessary to have a second temple, and then have the aftermath of the second temple, and then go through 2,000 years of exile, before we get to the final gula. You know, something along those lines. And when the final gula comes, you'll see how this particular incident, which seems like a big deal to you guys, and has, you know, endless consequences, you'll see how it fits into the grand narrative. And the angel goes on to tell him that. So that means that when you had, listen closely, when you had trouble concerning the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the stop order that was issued by Koresh Melech Paras, and they didn't know there's 18 years later things are going to change. They didn't know at that time. Daniel doesn't know the immediate future that Koresh is going to die and be replaced by some guy called Achashverosh. and you're going to have a Purim story, and then and after the Purim story is over, you know, Queen Esther will be the queen, and the next king, Dariush the son, will be the son of Queen Esther, and blah, 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 you know, all this, you know, he didn't know that at that time. And the most unusual set of circumstances are going to result in the renewal, the permission to build the temple 18 years after the stop order. Nobody knew that at the time. And so the Shibuli Leket, if I understand correctly, is quoting Sadigon, and I didn't see in Sadigon, is saying this is where the 3 weeks concept comes from. That we, of course, are not Nevi'im, and we are in mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. And I know the Mishnah says five things happen to Shabbat, but sometimes I get it. But in a broader picture, the truth is we don't really fast for that reason. I mean, we do. But when you know, most people, I'm sure almost everybody, you get to the 3 weeks, you think, you know, Churban Beis HaMikdash, like in a broad generic way, unless you have a podcast to give, right? But in a generic way, what's the 3 weeks? What's Shabbat, Thomas? You know, Beis HaMikdash stuff. The Romans broke in here, the Babylonians broke in there, and eventually Tisha B'Av. Like that. And the origins, so in other words, we're upset over Korban. How you express your upsetness, you know, what's popped up, no music, no weddings, that kind of stuff. Some people, as you know, by the way, the real frumis, the Shulchan Aruch says, used to fast for 3 weeks. You understand? In other words, this passage I just read you in the book of Daniel, there is a, it's in the Shulchan Aruch somewhere. Let me just see some. Hold on for a second. Yeah, here it is. I had to pull out my rusty, trusty Mate Ephraim, where he talks in the very beginning, Yesh Ansei Maisa, Noang Nasanus Arboim Yom, to some people. You know, in the old days, I know it's going to sound funny, the Hasidim Rishonim, not the Hasidim now, but, you know, the pious of old, so they liked to do a lot of fasting. They really did. And one of the shtick was, you fast 40 days, like the 40 days that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah. And how do you do that? And you do it around the, you know, some do it in Elul, and some, because that's when Moshe went up the last time to get the second tablets. But you can't count the Saturdays in there and the Rosh Chodesh and all that. So one of the customs from the Shloi says is, Yesh maschil min achar shivaser betamus misan mashtesich letashlam. And so people would fast after Shabbos and Thomas. Those are the 3 weeks. Now, not including Shabbos and so forth, but, you know, the 3 weeks, and it's like the Daniel fast. You understand? It has this old history to it. And the idea behind the whole thing, as I understand it, is that it's a time that's mesugal for worrying about the Beis HaMikdash. Because Daniel was tremendously bothered by this. And the answer he got must have blown him away, because he's talking about the final end of history. Even Tchias HaMesim is mentioned in the dream that Daniel has, the vision that he has over the course of chapter 11 and chapter 12, which is very long. And, you know, it's a lot more than he bargained for. But from here you see a practice of, you know, treating 3 weeks as a unit. And 3 weeks as a unit, I would say, of worry about the Beis HaMikdash. And the idea we have, as best I can tell, the idea we have over here is that instead of turning the 3 weeks into a question, yes music, no music, live music, a cappella, this kind of haircut, that kind of haircut, can you go swimming? You know, in other words, the mundane things that we reduce everything to, because we have to, because life consists of practice and halacha, I get it. But rather to think, to take the grand picture into mind the way Daniel did, and be worried, how come the Beis HaMikdash is not back? And you know, how things look as far as rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash is concerned. And what's the situation of Klal Yisrael nowadays altogether today? And so on and so forth. So this tradition of, from Nishabula Nisadion, in my mind, is very concentrating. Makes you think of the essentials, I would say, as far as this time of the year is concerned. So I'm not speaking about Shabbos and Thomas per se, but Shabbos and Thomas, the beginning of the unit of 3 weeks. And Daniel is already worried about the 3 weeks, his time. I'm not saying that he fasted during what you and I call the Bein HaMetzarim, but the idea of the 3 weeks as a proper unit of fasting goes back as far as we can tell, as far as I can trace it, to the book of Daniel in chapter 10. If you're interested in the rest of this, check it out yourself. I don't mean to be super silly, I'm serious, because it's a long and very complicated nevuah, very long, complicated dream of the most tremendous import for Jewish messianism. Whole books have been written on the subject, but I don't want to go into that right now. So anyway, as always, I want to thank Mishpachas Stefanski for letting me say a few words on the Inyanim de Yuma, or the Inyanim of the 3 weeks. And with that, I wish you all a good day.